our approach is. This is an extremely important thing because a person's contact sheets can say all kinds of things about him and or about her. Just take a contact sheet and look at it. You can immediately tell if the person is a professional snap shooter, or if the person is a professional gimmick user, or if the person is trying to very strongly just stand flat-footed and say something about the world in which we live, to say it in a special and a beautiful way. Some time ago, a fellow came to the office with some contact sheets, and he said, "I've been shooting some pictures over at Piedmont Park, and I'd like you to look at the photographs and to tell me what you think about them." And so I said, "Okay," and so I was looking at the photographs. And then I said to him, "Why were you afraid of the people?" And he about dropped all of his teeth, and he said, "How did you know I was afraid of the people?" He told it in his contact sheet because he would never confront anyone. It was always from the back or from the side or a little bit around, but never face-to-face and eye-to-eye confrontation. And I knew immediately that while he was photographing in Central Park, he was insecure around the individuals. You can tell the extroverts. The individuals always, you know, right into the eyes of an individual, almost shooting right down the throat. Always got to be right in there, you know, just forcing and dominating. Or the introvert. Of course, the real interesting and the exciting and the important part of it is to take the individual who might be extrovert or introvert, whatever, but the individual who takes the camera and who shoots totally around the world of the subject. I mentioned Paul Fusco a few moments ago. Let me use again the story he did on the grapes, the problem with the migrant workers in the grape fields in California. Okay, Fusco did a beautiful job with this book because what he did is he went to the side and to the back. There were times when he wanted to leave an impression of almost loneliness. There was a time when the subjects needed to be confronted, and he was so sensitive to people and to the situation that he did all of these things. There were times when he stood to the side and just photographed because he needed to do that kind of thing to get it across. But as one moves through the book, there is this kind of feeling that Fusco is saying something fully and deeply and has strong beliefs himself about what is happening in that world at that time. All of the great photographers are like that. Eugene Smith is an example of that. Just go through Spanish Village. Our nurse midwife. All of these things, examples of people who photograph out of the heart and with the eye and with the brain, and how it all comes together in such a beautiful way. It is at this point that we start thinking and seeing pictures. Around us is a big world of sameness, of dullness, of vastness, and chaos. Now, the reason why we see the world this way is because we've seen too much too often. We don't ask anymore like the child, "Why is the sky blue? Why is that flower red? Why is the rain, why is it wet when it drops on me?" We don't ask that because we have become so mature that we've gone far beyond that, and these things don't bother us anymore, and so we lose a lot in life. And we just look at the sameness and the dullness and the vastness of the world. But the great photographers have the ability to look at the sameness and the dullness and the vastness and the chaos and make it come alive again. They have the ability to be able to see the world and all at once to see something that is important. The thing that causes a photographer to commit visual suicide is to come to the place of seeing nothing new or unique or strange or exciting. Because you know what happens then? When that happens, it forces us to fall back on the gimmicks. And it forces us to fall back on the technical alone. And all at once, the subject becomes secondary. The important thing is, people cannot see the subject because they see our gimmicks first, and they can't see the subject because they see our snapshots first. And so we fall back and the subject becomes secondary. We become photographers and not interpreters. But you know, an interesting thing, and a lot of times I've heard photographers say this, even national and international travel will not necessarily make one a fine photographer. It'll hold for a while, hold off the truth about our ability, who we are, and where we are in photography, because the excitement of the travel gives us a drive for excellence for a while, but after a while, it doesn't work any longer. Reason why it doesn't work any longer is because we say, I live in Atlanta. If I could go to Miami, I'd be a fine photographer. But we go to Miami, and finally Miami becomes Atlanta. And we say, but if I could go to Santa Fe, New Mexico, I'd become a fine photographer. And then Santa Fe, New Mexico, after a while, becomes Miami. Or if I could go to Chicago, or if I could go to New York, or to Paris, or London, or wherever. Because what happens is if that's the only thing that we base our strength in photography on, then after a while, all cities become one city, and all people become one person. Like, for example, this is my home, Atlanta. I'm constantly, if I had a dime for every mile I traveled since I was 17, I would be able, I started to say retire, but I'll never do that. That's no good. But anyway, I have a lot of money. Let me put it that way. Okay, so, and yet, at the same there are times when I wake up in the morning in a motel room and I have to think, where am I? Many, many times I've done. I've gone back to motels again. And I thought, I've been in this motel sometime. I remember it. I don't remember exactly when, but I've been in this motel. And I'm not really very old either. I better insert that at this point. You know, I don't want to get out on a limb here, you know. But anyway, all at once, I came to realize that people are people wherever they are. And if the only drive that I have is to go from one city to the next, so that I can be strong in my photography, then I got all kinds of problems immediately. Now, again, that's good for a while. And photographers love to travel, and that's great. There's nothing, of course, wrong with that. But what I'm saying is, if I cannot stand firmly on the ground here and look at the visual world of Atlanta, Georgia, and photograph it with some kind of visual strength, I'm not going to do it in Miami very long. I'm not going to do it in Chicago very long. I'm not going to do it in Portland, Oregon very long. Because, first of all, I've got to learn how to do it here. Okay, now let's take some things here at this point. British photographer Bill Brandt once said, "It is part of a photographer's job to see more intensely than most people do. He must be like a child who looks at the world for the first time, the traveler who enters a strange country, the ability to see." What happens here is that when we get all of the technical know-how together and this becomes second nature, then what really happens is we become our photographs. Now, I don't mean that by making it a biased and prejudiced kind of thing, but what I do mean is that it is here that our style emerges. It is here that people can look at our photographs and say something about us. It is here that we form patterns extremely necessary. Some time ago, I kept reading about the styles and studying the styles of individuals. And so at that point, I said, I've got to form a style, because if I'm going to have a distinctive area in photography, I've got to form a style. So I was going out looking everywhere for styles. You know, and at this point, it was about a gimmick kind of thing. And so I was thinking, how can I form a style? And so one day, I went into a place where they'd been doing my lab work. And so a guy came up and he said, "Is your name Rutledge, Don Rutledge?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, I've been noticing your work, and I want you to know I really like your style." Well, that really, you know, I just dropped every tooth in my head, because here I am, you know, I'm trying to find a style, you know, and this guy tells me he likes my style. Well, I didn't want to lie about it, and I didn't want to tell the truth, you know. I didn't want him to know that I was so stupid. I didn't know what my style was. And yet I knew that I wasn't going to leave that place without finding out what he had in mind. And so I said to him, "What is it you like about my style?" And he said, "Well," he said, "I could tell a lot about you." And so I laughed, and I said, "Are you sure?" And he said, "Yes." And he started explaining to me about interests that I had, a concern for people, a concern for the needs and the conditions of people in the world, and a concern for trying to overcome some of those social and economic and whatever needs. And he stood there and described me in such a way that I could not believe, and yet I'd never met the man, he had never met me before. He taught me an important lesson, that style comes out of who we are. At that point that we become our photographs, if it is snapshooting, if it is gimmicks, if it is eye, heart, brain, whatever it is, we become our photographs and form our position. Now, there are some things that nobody can deny, sir. There are some key elements that make each one of us our own person. And I don't care who tries and how hard, these are key elements. One is that we choose or we make our own choices in the subjects we photograph. A lot of times we blame people for a lot of things, but what it really boils down to is when I'm standing out there with a camera and when I'm looking at the subject and when I'm making my own choices on subject and position and movements or the lack of it, all of these things, when I'm looking at those, I'm making my own choices. They are my choices alone. There's another thing, and that is the ability to remove from the subject anything that is a distracting element or to add to it important parts and to say something by interpreting, to look at the elements to remove things, to look at the elements and to add things. You know, the kaleidoscope, this is one of my real favorite things, the kaleidoscope that you look at it and you turn it and it changes patterns. The ability to look through the viewfinder and to isolate the world and to see as, let's say, people move, that like the kaleidoscope, sometimes the patterns are strong and sometimes they're not strong. But the ability to see what is happening in all of the areas of the viewfinder and to interpret that at the split moment. That, of course, is the thing that Cartier-Bresson calls the decisive moment. The ability to watch all of the things as they move in the world in which we're living. And as they come together, the way we would like to interpret and feel that it is accurate at that point. And at that moment, to be able to squeeze the shutter and to capture that decisive moment becomes an extremely important thing. Or the kaleidoscope, as the patterns change, this is where we begin getting our strength. This is where we can take the vastness and sameness of the world and put it together in something very small and make it come alive. And it becomes our responsibility there. Now, there's a third thing that makes us our own person in photography. And that has to do with that moment we press the shutter. Our time, our chosen time, is frozen right then. No editor tells us at that moment when to press the shutter. Nobody standing across our shoulder tells us. We make the choice alone. We can blame everybody else in the world, but we make the choice. They may take our photographs, and sometimes they may be cropped badly. They may be laid out badly, all of this. But basically, the photograph depends on me and on you. In other words, at that moment, you are the master. Not the camera, not the editor, nobody else in the world. You are your own master. And at that moment, the choice you make is basically the choice that's going to last all the way through, no matter how badly or how well it is used otherwise. So, all at once, the pressure is on us as the photographer. There is no one else around to blame. So now that the responsibility is in our hands, what can we do with it? Well, the first thing I want to mention is to study with a passion the works and styles of the great photographers. And some of them you may not like, their style, their work. You may even violently disagree with their approaches. But to me, it is extremely important that I know the styles and approaches of great photographers. What makes a difference, for example, in the work of Eugene Smith? and Cartier Bresson. One makes a difference in the work of Don McCollum and Bob Capa. One makes a difference in all of these photographers, and no one has a right to live and breathe and be motivated in the world of photography for any long period of time without having so much interest in this that the person will study and say, why have they emotionally and intellectually, why have they spoken to thousands of people in the world? Why? What is it about their approach and their style? Now, I'm not talking about mimicking them and following that, because I'm not talking about getting on the bandwagon with them, but I'm talking about understanding so that when we form our own positions, we will be able to know what's going on in our world, in their world, in the world of all of us together. To study with a passion, this kind of thing is extremely important. People have seen their photography and they have been moved by it. We need to do the same. There are four things that quickly, at this point, I want to mention that will help us to get it all together. And then I would like to show, to go through quickly, the photographs. But first of all, our technique. Our technique is just simply your personal approach, your style to photography. What are you trying to say? How do you want to say it? And one other thing that's extremely important, how easily can you be satisfied? Those are things that we need to ask ourselves. The next thing that we have the tool to work with is lighting. Now, I know that this is just a part of our world, but what we as photographers need to do is to understand that in lighting, there is a naturalness. The forming of a rapport with the viewer, the ability to photograph in such a way that there is nothing that separates the viewer from the subject, that makes them feel that they're there. An artificial kind of lighting brings often an unconscious fakeness, and it bothers the viewer. We need to know why. The ability to see light, to understand the effect it has on viewers, and why. Composition. The way you and I see the world and frame it. So composition becomes us, our personal place in life. To be able to learn how to delete so that we can interpret scenes. To understand how to add so that we can interpret scenes. And then there's the thing of expression. The movements and forms of the body. You remember yesterday, I mentioned that my background is in psychology. I came to realize how enormously important it is. Just a simple thing of body language. That when I photograph, to know the positions of people so that the viewer is sensitive to this and to understand. It would help photographers just to be able to take a book and study body language. How it is that we look and become sensitive to people's expressions and emotions and their moods. And we photograph it. Some people are already sensitive to that. But all of us should discipline and train ourselves in such a way that we understand the movements of the body and what is happening. Now let me take just a few moments, and I'm going through a series of pictures to illustrate some of these things. I'm not going to be talking about them much, but I just want to go through them to illustrate some of the things that we're talking about at this point. The first section will have to do with how we can go from prose to poetry, how the elements in photography can go from something that is almost hideous like the flies on fish in an Eskimo village to a rat in Cincinnati that youngsters were using as a game. A migrant camp. The prose of talking about something in that world. A man whose only contact with the outside world was once a day with the meals on wheels. Now notice how we slowly go into the poetic.
kind of theme.
A rancher's son on the prairie. Sometimes image can become not just a simple thing, but it requires a point of trying to think and determine what's going on. Sometimes that's good. All right, let's talk about composition for a moment. Or see, just think about composition at this point. How depth can be in a fiction, using all kinds of elements in the world around us. To just look and see where people are and who they are. These things are everywhere. The very simple things, such as a puddle of water. Sometimes to include the environment of Appalachia, the homes in the right side of the pictures, like of the writer using words to say things. The photographer uses lines and elements and forms to communicate things. Simple structure of a building, how it can be turned into something stronger than just lines, they're everywhere. Even makes the world more beautiful. Here's the one I was telling about. That if they cropped it all out and just gave a mug shot, then I could go into the editor and say, look, you know, you only just came in close, but here's what I was trying to say. You're trying to get attention to the page in the paper, and why did you knock all of this out? It's important. Another one is an example of a woman in a museum, a gold, old gold museum, and how they use depth to make it more than just a mugshot. Not the whole reservation, but lines, things are everywhere to look at them. In Hawaii, a writer was interviewing him, and I just shot the picture. All right, let's think about light now. Just don't think about the composition, others. Just think about light. All kinds of light in the world. All right, let's think about movements, all kinds of movements, facial expressions, the movement of the hands, the arms, the body, and how this brings about a rapport with the viewer so that they feel they're there watching what's going on. How sometimes, if you want to make it more complicated, you can pick this up here and at the same time can force the viewer into almost a feeling of, you know, being bothered and concerned. So the breaking of the rules sometimes is more important than the keeping of the rules. The kaleidoscope example is the person, the image on the right side. I was shooting these two. It was working okay, but at that moment, the person just walked in, and so I snapped a shutter at that split moment, which added an extra dimension and depth. So even the raised foot of the man, the hand to the eye, all of these are body language. Sense of movement. Body language. Expression, this man is behind the desk. I could either make a choice of just shooting the desk or to use something like this. And the poster had something to show us something about the man, because he was the kind of person who did hang in there. How sometimes bad composition had to do with some of the things that they were trying to do in a mental retarded. And so by throwing the composition off, like heads not in that up there and bad composition there, that it bothers, unconsciously bothers the person, and it causes them to think about something I was trying to say about helping these youngsters. Okay, let's talk about interpreting for a moment, how that photographs can interpret a situation. Just think about, again, the body language, the movements, the whole thing here, and how it interprets what's going on. Simplicity sometimes, interpreting within. Fine, okay.